It's Paul Smolin, MD, your PEDcast host, bringing you informative and entertaining knowledge on a wide range of parenting and child health topics. You have parenting questions. He has answers. It's portable, practical pediatrics on your schedule. And here is your PEDcast host, Dr. Paul Smolin.
Welcome to another edition of my blog, DocSmo.com. I'm your host, Dr. Paul Smolin, a general pediatrician with 31 years of practice so far, and I am delighted to have as my returning guest, Dr. John Simpson, PhD, clinical licensed psychologist with an abundance of practice experience under his belt and special training in adolescent psychology. Notice I didn't say decades this time, John.
I was very impressed that you limited yourself.
I didn't want to hurt your feelings. And
No. Very sensitive about it, yes.
So thank you for joining us tonight, Dr. Simpson. You recently mentioned to me that in your experience, one of the most frightening aspects of parenting today is dealing with computers and the internet. How did you put it? If you want to see parents have a meltdown, bring up the topic of computers, smartphones, and the internet. I think that's what you said.
Yes.
That is exactly what we're going to do in this PEDcast. Discuss some of the issues parents need to deal with when it comes to the tech world. What's the old saying? With knowledge comes wisdom. Let's hope we all gain some knowledge and wisdom today. Dr. Simpson, it's your turn now. I'm going to ask you some questions. And we're going to talk about the internet and kids. So let's start, get right into it. In the practical world of a psychologist, how do you see parents perceiving their children's interactions with the internet and computer technologies?
In my experience, parents often assume that their children know about using the internet what they, the parents, know. Parents often like to believe, though they really don't believe it, they like to believe that the internet is to their children what it is to them, a somewhat benign place to go where they can communicate with friends and catch up and share pictures and catch up on the news and exchange emails and nothing more than that. It takes some bad experiences, either direct or indirect, for parents to realize that the internet is not always the benign place they like to think of it as being.
Dangerous place.
Can be, very.
Yeah. All right, so what do you see as the biggest danger or dangers that children face in the internet?
My thought is that the biggest danger they face is that children often have a level of technological knowledge that far surpasses the development of their social judgment, their social maturity and reasoning, their capacity to think through and judge what would be or is not a safe and unsafe place to be, is far more limited than their technological ability. So a lot of times children know how to get to various websites, social networking sites. They don't always gauge very carefully whether they actually know that a person with whom they are interacting is really that safe.
Yeah, and they don't know their intentions either. They don't have the
social
skills to know that. Sort of like letting a 12-year-old drive the family car?
It's sort of like letting a 12-year-old drive the family car, but it's more like telling a 12-year-old, 12-year-olds can probably drive the family car. Well, maybe they can and maybe they can't. But just because some people think they can doesn't mean it's a great idea.
Right. They probably have the physical skills to drive a car, but they don't have the judgment and the, you know, experience and all that goes around sophisticated social interactions. That's what you're saying?
Absolutely. Their assumption that a person who identifies himself as being a 13-year-old is actually a 13-year-old is often a sadly mistaken assumption.
Yeah. Do you have any direct experience with those kind of situations?
I do, and fortunately they did not result in some of the tragedies that one sees occurring in the news and places like that. But yes, I do.
Yeah. Okay, next question. So can you give parents some guidelines, some healthy guidelines to let them approach this issue with? What should they be thinking about? And what do you think are reasonable guidelines for parents to set for their kids as far as the computer use and internet safety?
Well, I tend to think that parents ought to really consider the use of the computer by their children as having access to a very, very sophisticated tool. It can be used to do a lot of wonderful things, and it can be used to do some things that could ultimately be harmful. I don't think most parents would turn their children loose with using a chainsaw. And I think when parents turn their children loose using the internet unsupervised, they're equally facing some possible dangers. So I think parents need to be able to say first to themselves and then to their children that we need to know what you're doing is ultimately safe. And I'm not going to assume that everything you believe to be safe is in fact safe. So we're going to have to work on this together.
Okay. So how can parents know what their kids are doing on the internet?
Well, I think the first thing that parents have to admit is what they, the parents, know, and the children know too, and that is parents probably know less about navigating around the internet than their children do. So I think it helps sometimes for a parent to say, you know, I bet you know more about doing this than I do. We need to find a way to work together. We need to be partners in this. My job is to make sure that you're safe and that whatever you're doing will not endanger you. Your job is to find ways to increasingly reassure me that you can handle more independence. If we do this together, we're both going to be happy. Don't make it a competition.
Right. But set limits and be very clear about those limits as well. So, you know, pornography, I mean, I think that needs to be discussed. You know, relationship with strangers in chat rooms and on Facebook and the like. I mean, people need to have their eyes wide open.
People do. But I think children are the ones who are less likely to be able to do that without some direct supervision and guidance. Mm-hmm. Children are much more likely to say, don't worry, I'll be okay. Nothing is going to happen. Except to children, nothing ever happens until it happens. Somebody is always going to be the one who has that happen to them, who meets the internet pornographer, who gets bullied online by groups of people they may not even know. It's always going to be somebody else. So parents need to be able to say, look, it's my responsibility to do some due diligence here. I have a responsibility as a parent to make sure that you're safe. You're going to have to work with me to help me realize that you are, if you want to have the access to the internet that you say you do.
Right. So parents cannot be passive about this. They need to take an active role. They need to let their wishes be known. Like, you know, we're not going to go to pornography sites. We're not going to give out personal information. We're not going to interact with strangers over a long period of time or dare meet strangers on the internet. Things like that, right? Is that what you're saying?
Right. Absolutely clear.
Okay. And I think it's also reasonable to say, you know, we're going to put monitoring software on the computer that they have access to and internet filters so that to help them, because, you know, let's face it, adults sometimes wander into places by accident that they don't want to wander, and all of a sudden things are being put on their computers that they had no intentions of looking for, but it came and found them. So
right.
The monitoring software, the internet filters, I think there should be a family agreement, you know, some kind of written agreement. You know, it will change over time, but so everybody knows the rules. And I think that putting a computer in a public place rather than a child's room or someplace where adults can't supervise is good to get started. That way a parent has some idea what's going on. And you're looking at the history. You know,
absolutely.
Yeah, you can look at the history of things.
And okay. I think if you're going to have the monitoring software and all that, it's probably a good idea to make it clear that when you put it on there, others turn it off. But part of the agreement, part of the trust that is involved here is saying it will stay on if, in fact, you, the child, would like to continue to be able to use the computer as you choose to.
Okay, so one point is parents need to take an active role. Another, I hear you saying, is that the computer use is a privilege and not a right, and that continued moving forward in the evolution of their use of this technology requires certain things of them that they achieve. Is that, am I clear?
No, but I, in simplest terms, you know, making the child aware very clearly, if you are asking me for the privileges you say you want, I need to know that you are first accepting the responsibilities you have to be able to accept. And if I see that you can handle the responsibilities, then we can talk about the privileges you want. But it's not a matter of having the privileges until you lose them. It's a matter of earning the privileges you want by demonstrating you can handle the responsibilities.
Okay. Well, I think you may have already answered this question, but my next question was, can online relationships on the internet be damaging to children? And how does a parent protect their kids from these kinds of damaging relationships?
Well, I think you made some very good points where you said there are certain patterns of interaction on the internet that are probably inherently more likely to be dangerous than others. Communicating with people whom one really doesn't know. Communicating across long distances, being asked to meet someone who is actually a total stranger somewhere. There are lots of dangerous patterns that one could be involved in. Some of them can involve personal relationships. Some of them could involve the use of money. You know, I'm requesting money. Would you pay for this? Would you borrow your parents' credit card for that? I mean, there are lots of dangers out there, and parents need to help their children anticipate the warning signs.
Right. This is tough stuff, isn't it?
It is very hard work, and as I said, I think probably more than anything else, it is one of those areas that a parent legitimately has a hard time saying, I know what you've been through and what you're going through, because we don't. It's a new world.
Yeah.
For them, it's everyday life. For us, it's all brand new, and they're learning it faster than we're catching up.
Well, there's just no privacy, and
no,
you know, everything's just out there.
Right.
Okay, so my next question, do you see parents who just, like, don't get it, stay totally uninformed about what their kids are doing, and, you know, where does that lead? You know, is that...
I see parents who stay totally uninformed, but these are also parents who tend to take a very hands-off approach to child rearing anyway. Their attitude seems to be more often one of, if there's no problem, I don't have to do anything. So being proactive, being involved, making this growing up period a cooperative activity is just foreign to them. And their hands-off attitude toward the internet is just one part of it.
Yeah. Yeah, they probably aren't involved with other media that their kids watch.
No.
You know, and
they don't. They oftentimes don't really know their child's friends. They may not be aware of to whose home their child is going, who the parents are, if the parents are home. I mean, there's a laundry list of things that they assume without knowing.
Right, right. Okay. Well, let's say a parent does get involved and they do everything that we're suggesting are good practices, like the family meetings about computer and working out the rules and putting computer in a public place and articulating the do's and don'ts, not giving out personal information, not, you know, meeting strangers on the internet, et cetera. Are there still other things out there that, you know, you see happen to families in your experience that get them in big trouble? Are there other factors involved here?
I don't know that there are other factors so much. I think the one factor, the wild card a lot nowadays in trying to help understand what your child is doing on the internet is the use of a smartphone, because it isn't necessary to sit in front of a computer. I can get on the internet by using my smartphone. I don't need to be on a computer. I don't need to have to communicate that way. Most anything I can do on my computer, I can do on my smartphone in terms of communicating with other people. So I think parents need to be aware of how their children are using the phone, where those phones are. You know, even to the point of saying that at a certain point in the evening, if you're home and you're in your room or in the area where the computer is doing homework, it is your job to convince me that you have a reason to have your smartphone with you, because it is difficult for me to have any idea at all why you need it.
What age do you think smartphones are reasonable for kids, or if any age?
Well, nowadays, the smartphone has sort of become the norm rather than the exception.
I know.
I mean, I don't want to sound too act like I'm not taking it seriously, but to tell a child that you have to have a flip phone is, you know, is sort of like saying that you will never be able to live indoors. I mean, it's almost a constitutional right.
Well, so, let's take the smart out of the question then. What age would you recommend families get a phone for their kids?
I think at an age where their child is expected or needs to be able to communicate with a parent and may have no other ways of doing so, the more times a child has to be away from a parent and may need to be in contact with them, the more they may need to have access to a phone.
Well, that's exactly the way I answered that question. So,
yeah, I mean, the need for a smartphone, I guess it depends on the degree of maturity that a child has shown using other forms of communication anyway. Right. I mean, I will tell people right away, if you tell me that you have a hard time figuring out how to write down a homework assignment and turn it in the next day, I have a hard time understanding how you could legitimately expect to drive a car and have a smartphone, because I think they require more personal responsibility than writing down an assignment and turning it in.
So in what I'm hearing, you know, throughout this talk, as I'm listening to you talk, what I'm hearing, if I were listening to this, would be as a parent thinking, all right, I can't control this technology. There's too many ways out there. The kids are way smarter than we are. They're always ahead of us. So I've somehow got to instill in my child the sense of what I expect from them, and they have to make the judgments of right and wrong. That's the ultimate arbitrator of whether bad things happen or bad things don't happen. It's their
not just that they have to make the decisions, the good decisions, but I have to know that they are in a position to make a good or bad decision and made a good one. I have to understand that they're exercising their judgment, that they're thinking through what we've talked about, that they are using these skills and these abilities to differentiate situations so that they can now show me that they're acting responsibly.
Okay.
You know, telling me I'm being responsible is one thing. Showing me, letting me see the examples of when it's happening make me feel much better.
Great, great. Well, Dr. Simpson, thank you for joining your wisdom.
And always a pleasure.
With my audience and me, you're a delight and really fun to talk to. Let's start planning our next talk, of course, please.
And good evening to all the good people in Japan listening to us tonight.
Right. International global audience.
International global audience, the best to all of you.
Your comments are welcome, so please direct them to iTunes or my blog, www.docsmo.com. This is Dr. Paul Smolin, broadcasting from, you know, Studio 1E, that's the first child's bedroom, on the east side of the house, hoping this podcast can help you avoid some nasty fights when it comes to your kids' digital bites. Until next time. I would like to thank the following people for their assistance in the production of this podcast. Dr. David Jaffe, the voice of the introduction. Robert Beezer, the composer-arranger of the intro music. Ann Gesner, my wonderful content editor. Benjamin Smolin and Jerome Moof, the talented musicians who produced this delightful theme music. Sarah Smolin and Nathaniel Horlick for their digital wizardry. And Wendy Smolin Esquire and Seth, the Rocket Man Barrister Jaffe, for their inspirational guidance. Thanks, guys.
By listening to this podcast, you agree to all of the terms and conditions found at the DocSmo.com website. This DocSmo.com podcast is informational only. Dr. Smolin does not diagnose, treat, or offer specific medical advice for your child. For specific medical advice regarding your child, consult his or her healthcare provider.